if a website is listed on the label, it is legally a part of that label.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Working in the Weeds, a podcast from the UF-IFA Center for Aquatic and Invasive Plants. I'm your host, Jay Farrell, and my co-host, Christine Krebs.
Hey, Jay.
Well, Christine, we got a great conversation today. We're going to talk about some new things that are on the horizon. So tell us what we're going to get into today.
Yeah, so today we're talking about one of the biggest changes to pesticide use since the formation of the EPA in the 1970s. So today's conversation is kind of like a news broadcast, so to speak, where we're going to really share an update with a professional, Dr. Brett Boltmeyer with the Pesticide Information Office. And we're going to talk about these large changes that are happening with pesticide use. If you listen to our previous episodes called Book Club, Silent Spring, a book that brought change, and the first episode that Dr. Boltmeyer guest starred on, Pesticide Safety, you recall that there's a rich history when it comes to pesticide use, right? There's a lot of science and policy that informed the pesticide regulation and safety that we now follow today. And our conversation today is going to talk about some big changes that are happening for scientists and professionals in the field. This change is being led by pesticide use in areas that have endangered species. Hey, Dr. Boltmeyer, or Brett, if we can call you that for the rest of the episode.
100%. It's weird to hear you calling me Dr. anything.
Well, we're glad to have Brett here with us today because this is a new topic, but he truly is at the forefront nationally on what is going on. So we do have a bona fide expert with us today. So Brett, thank you for doing that. But I want to set the stage a little bit. So Christine mentioned Rachel Carson. So she wrote her seminal book in the early 1960s, Silent Spring, and that led to the creation of EPA in 1970. But what it really did for pesticides is it fostered the rewrite of FIFRA. That's the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, Rodenticide Act, and it brought it into the EPA. So before the big rewrite, before EPA, you had pesticides. They had a label, but the label was just use directions. I mean, it was literally, here are some things we think you should do. Feel free to do them or not, or make up whatever you want. Violations were essentially not a thing. So under the rewrite of FIFRA, it said, no, the label is the law. There are certain pesticides that are now listed as restricted use. You have to have a license to buy them. Well, how do you get a license? Well, that's part of FIFRA. How do you be certified, recertified? All of these things, record keeping, all came out in 1972. Huge change. Well, we've been rocking along under that for about 50 years now. Things have gone well, but now we're at a place that FIFRA really isn't fulfilling completely what we need in this pesticide safety space. So big changes on the horizon. So Brett, kind of tell us under that umbrella, where are we and where are we headed now that we're here in 2024?
And you really set it up right that in the 70s, you're building something brand new. And when you're building something brand new, you tend to be very general, right? We went from under the old rules, it was protecting consumers from fraud, that what you bought in that jug was really in there. And now you're moving to this idea of protection of some level. So we're protecting the applicator, we're protecting other people, we're protecting the environment. And I use that.
Don't pollute.
Don't pollute. And it really was in broad terms. Well, like anything, when you get into it, you start finding all of these little nuances that you have to deal with. And the last 50 years has been working in some of that nuance, but we've gotten to a place where nuance isn't enough anymore. There are some big things that need to change. And the biggest driver here is the environment was used generally, but now EPA is realizing we have to do more as it relates to endangered species specifically. And it's not just that we need to deal with endangered species, but the process that was in place to do that was really cumbersome, not effective, and they got so far behind they almost had to go, we can't deal with this continuing to do the things we're doing. Something has to change. And that's where we are now.
So this is a big subject. And you've already mentioned endangered species. So by the very nature of the conversation, we've got to talk about the Endangered Species Act. How does that come into this discussion?
So the way that works is the EPA registers these pesticides. So that means that they are looking for potential risks. But that's really all they're doing. You have these other agencies, one being the Fish and Wildlife Service, another being the Marine Fisheries Service. They're looking at endangered species. So they're coming at this from two different angles. The agencies are saying, where are these endangered species? How do they survive? Kind of their biology, understanding the endangered species. EPA is saying, where will activities that we oversee, and in this case, pesticides, potentially overlap with endangered species? And the way the process used to work is EPA would basically try to sort out endangered species. So they would say, we're going to use a product in, let's just say, Missouri, Arkansas, and Illinois. It's the only place that this pesticide is used. Well, any of the salmon or Pacific Northwest endangered species, there's no way that pesticide will impact them. They can remove those endangered species. All right, well, here's 1,000-something endangered species that overlap with that pesticide. The next question is, will it impact them? Will it do anything to them? EPA gets to a point where they have sorted, it's not even going to come in contact, it might come in contact, and then here's the ones that we think it could pose a risk to. Now it goes to the agencies, and the agencies use investigation, science to recommend some possible solutions to not endanger a species further. And this would go back and forth, and it took many, many years. And that process got us really behind and in some trouble.
Well, the issue, I think, is this. The Endangered Species Act is regulated under the EPA, right? So that's where that act lives. So EPA says, we're going to try our best to protect these things. But also, EPA is way bigger than pesticides. It's Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, all of these other, and Endangered Species Act, all in there together. So the Endangered Species Act really came in with, hey, if you're going to build a new bridge, what's going to happen to that water? Is it going to get stirred up? Is there something there? So big construction projects, EPA oversee what is going on so we're not impacting endangered species. Pesticides are not part of this discussion. That's regulated under FIFRA. That's not part of this. Well, with time, groups have started saying, no, pesticides do pose a risk. It's not just construction and development. So now we've got FIFRA and Endangered Species Act coming in conjunction with each other, and it has been very difficult to sort out. So Brett, to your point, they got far behind because we never conceptually, when these laws were written and accepted into Congress, this intersection was never part of that discussion. So now it is. And this was brought about by a number of groups filing lawsuits that said, you're not adequately protecting these things. They're under your care and keeping, and you're not doing enough on the pesticide front to protect them. And EPA held their hands up and said, you're right. These were not part of our plan. And now they have to be. So what we're talking about today is how do we put pesticide regulation and safety together with endangered species, right? Is that framing it correctly?
And not just putting them together, but finding an efficient way to make decisions. Because the issue is there are thousands and thousands of endangered species, and there are thousands and thousands of pesticides. And the old way evaluated each individual product on each individual endangered species. And it becomes such a backlog that you will never get through it all. And that's a problem because EPA truly wants to look at this and create a much safer landscape in which we can balance this need to protect species and biodiversity in the environment with also using these tools in the way that they're intended. So not only have they not addressed this in the past, but the mechanisms they have to do that are not efficient enough moving forward. So they've made dramatic changes in the decisions they're going to make.
All right. So you just said in the past. So I think we're going to have to do a retreat to move forward here. So let's go back to the past. Let's talk about how things have been done with respect to pesticide compliance. And then how are we now bringing endangered species into this conversation.
So as we look towards the future, a lot of that is going to build on the foundation in the past. And I think the place to go to is in the writing of the labels. So this is a dramatic departure. We've mentioned it earlier. Old labels were really only concerned with what's in here. Are you getting what you say you're getting? And then here's some general idea on how to use it. It's like putting together furniture you get from IKEA. So just the guidelines, right? I can kind of really do what I want. Into a label is now truly an enforceable thing. This is not a suggestion. It's law. So that really is the one place that everybody goes to get the information they need to not only use a product effectively, but legally. Well, now that gets real hard when you're moving beyond here's the places you can use it, here's the rates you can use it, but now we're having to take into account something like endangered species, which move, which change. I think the moving from the past to now is we recognize how much change there is and the need for flexibility to address those changes at either end, either to afford more protections for endangered species or to create a product that is more usable for the end user, say a farmer. Hey, when we wrote this, we said you couldn't do these four things. That actually makes it really hard for you to use it. And upon further reflection, it doesn't cause the problems that we thought it was. Here's some new flexibility for you to use that product. And we are now moving to a place where they have come up with what we're going to be talking about, how they're going to communicate that to the end user.
Right. So a pesticide label, it will say you can use this product on corn. We currently grow corn in all 50 states. So Maine to California, Oregon to Florida, long distance, a lot of different things happening there. That label simply can't capture all of the nuance quickly enough. So where is EPA going to now capture some of this nuance and address these individual state-by-state, region-by-region endangered species scenarios?
So the good news is we're still going to be in the label. The even better news is these labels aren't going to be 3,000 pages long to deal with the said nuance. That becomes, to your point, an unusable thing. So what we're starting to do is on a label, there will be references to websites. And here's where that's really, really important. I'm going to nerd out legally a little bit. If a website is listed on the label, it is legally a part of that label. Even though you're not on what we traditionally think of as a label, the little flip book that you've got, that website is there. Any website you go to now counts as label and is enforceable just like the rest of the label is. So if that website tells you to do something or not do something, it is enforceable. And obviously the flexibility here is that we have a website. Those can change to better reflect where we are. It's not, oh my gosh, we have to reprint all of these labels. We have to make sure we communicate the old labels don't work. We can start to handle and be more nuanced in a website much quicker.
Not in real time, but much closer to real time.
Correct. So there's multiple things that already exist in labels that some of our users may be familiar with. There are websites to take additional training. This is known as label mandated training. That already exists on websites. Anybody that listens to this that happens to be a farmer utilizing dicamba, they will list the manufacturer's website for updates is something that you needed to go to stay up to date with those products. So this isn't a brand new idea, but what we're about to talk about, the website that we're going to go to, is new.
So we talked about this new website or existing websites that are on these labels. And Jay and I have mentioned before in other episodes, if you listen to them, the science is never settled. And that's kind of the nature of science. And environmental management is super tricky, whether it's agriculture or natural resources. And with the science never being settled and progress happening with pesticide use, you mentioned this website and new information, ways to sort of inform people quicker because we have the technology nowadays, whether it's cell phones or the internet. So what is this website, new information that you're talking about?
So that's actually a perfect setup because the science never being settled is why we had to move to this website. Endangered species will move. So if we make a grand statement that no pesticides could be used in a certain area or only certain pesticides, but then the endangered species move, we have to account for that. So this website really lets them do that. And the website I'm referring to is something called Bulletins Live 2. Now, some of you may have been familiar with, there was a previous version of this, but really this Bulletins Live 2 is something that has limited use right now. It is in place right now, but is really going to be how EPA will manage all of the changes coming in the future. So what the Bulletins Live 2 does is it allows you to look at a map. So now you can see what are these areas of interest, and we'll get to those in just a moment. But it's also not just in space. So there's a map that defines where these areas of interest are, but it's set apart in time. So we have to balance that we can make changes minute to minute. The internet allows us to change things instantly, but that has to be balanced against a farmer that is planting a crop, that is planning their entire season. They can't necessarily deal with a change 10 minutes before they're going to go out and try to do what they're trying to do.
Yeah, or like an aquatic applicator working with an agency on a lake management plan and a year-long contract. It's like, hey, what are my options? What can we actually do?
So EPA really worked that in and said, okay, you can check at most 6 months before you're going to do a treatment, and that will sort of freeze you in time. Whatever exists at that point in time is good for the next 6 months. Now, you don't have to check it 6 months before. You could check it 5 months or 4 months or even the day before, say, if you wanted to. Whenever you check is when this map locks in. Now, what it's locking in are these PULAs, which stands for a pesticide use limitation area. So what does that mean? What that means is in this area, so if I look at this map and it happens to be colored pink for now, if I'm in a pink area, and I put in what product I'm using, it will tell me there are additional restrictions that are not listed on the label. Those restrictions can range from, for instance, here in Florida, there's an entire county, Palm Beach County, where a pesticide can't be used. There is a product that cannot be used in that county. Or it could be you have to have additional buffers or additional things that you have to do before you can use that pesticide.
So let's really talk about this map for a second. So you go to it, you're going to have shaded portions of the map. Those shaded areas are representing where a endangered species might be. So if you are in an area that's shaded, you have to be more cautious. And then they line out this pesticide, here are your precautions. So shaded, not shaded is a very important thing right now.
Yeah, so I went and took a look at it. And for Florida, for example, Okeechobee, Lake Okeechobee, is pink in the somewhat surrounding area. And then you click it, and it's referenced to a particular endangered species. And so that area is pink, but then, you know, it's not the entire South Florida area yet. But it's those areas where there's known endangered species. And yeah, it's pink. It's pretty easy to see with your eye. And then you can kind of search more specifically once you click that region.
And actually, in hearing what you're talking about, I think you're even getting into where EPA is moving next. So we have these PULAs that are established now that tell you, hey, pay attention. You're in an area that you have to do something that isn't on the label. The label is telling you to go there, but it's really for a limited number of products right now. So many of you may look on your label after this and go, well, I don't see this website. If you don't see that website, you continue on as normal reading your label, but I'm going to tell you, as we always do, that you must read the label every time, and certainly when you get new product, because it's a limited number now, but more are coming. So what Christine was referring to was a project that EPA undertook to look at vulnerable species. So we talked about they can no longer do individual species, individual pesticide decisions. They're trying to make much broader decisions. So, hey, there is this endangered species. Rather than looking at every pesticide individually, can we make some very blanket decisions for that species as a whole? And there is one in Florida that is sort of serving as their pilot. This was called the Vulnerable Species Protection Pilot, if you wanted to look that up. And it is giving some suggestions on how we might handle it. And what this sort of recommends is we may move from what we have now, use the label. Unless you're in a pool, then you use the label and bulletins. And then there's some directions. And to this will be much more, I've been using the traffic light analogy. If you're not in one of these areas, you use a label, there's your green light. If you do have the wording on your label and you're in a Pula, now you've got to pay attention. Is it a yellow light or a red light? The yellow light is, here's additional things you have to do. The red light is, you flat out cannot use the pesticide here. So that is where we are going to probably be heading in the future with more products.
So big change. So the label is still the law, but now Bulletins Live 2 is also going to be the law. But I want everybody to also realize, take a breath. Big change is coming, but there's going to be a long runway on this. We are a long way from having this really work itself out and be in an enforceable environment. So I think the key is start becoming familiar with this process, realizing that you need to look. And chances are you're going to go look and you're going to be fine. You're still going to be, just use the label. And just because you see color doesn't necessarily mean you're impacted, because the color is product specific, right? So you're going to be looking at different things, but just be aware there is more to consider.
And now is a really good time that we do have this long lead up to practice. I think a decent analogy is, we know that there are big changes coming. We're all going to go on a road trip, right? We don't know what cities. We're not sure exactly what we're doing, but we know we're taking a car. We know what this car looks like. We know what we can fit in this car. So start becoming familiar with the car, because this is going to be a long and winding trip. But this Bulletins Live 2 is how we're going to address all of the things that are coming, again, way down the road. We don't quite know all the way the EPA will go with this. Much of this is still in public comment or public discussion. Nothing is finalized, other than we have a pretty clear indication that the Bulletins Live 2 and this process of check your label. If there's the website, go to the website. Then check where you are in time and space. So I exist in the Pula or not at this particular time, and then just follow those directions. So fundamentally, we're still doing the same things. What is my plan for treatment? Here are my products. Read through the label. How do I use this product effectively and legally according to the instructions I've been given? The only change is that now there's instructions on a website too.
Right. And again, start going, looking. But just because you're included or you're not included, that's not the end of the day, because these things are going to continue to evolve. They're going to continue to change. We said at the beginning, a lot of this was brought in to the EPA by lawsuits and people saying you're not adequately protecting. Well, the next side of this is, after EPA launches what we've just discussed, there's probably going to be lawsuits happening then too, going, wait, this plan doesn't include this, or you didn't think about this, or there's other issues. So this is going to be a long, drawn-out process over the next several years as EPA, the services, the Forest Service, the Fish and Wildlife Service, as everyone puts these clothes on, they're going to have to figure out how they fit. So we're going to have to fit and grow into this program. So just start being aware and realizing that it is now part of our reality.
And I want to offer this to the listeners. Sometimes checking this website can seem like one extra step. A really good way to kind of start staying in the know of the updates is to subscribe to the UF IFAS Pesticide Information Office blog. We have that link in the show notes for you. And he has already written several regarding EPA updates and information. And so I highly recommend subscribing to the blog. And that way, if there's something that you really should pay attention to, there will most likely be a blog out about it and you can check it out.
And if you really like bad dad jokes and you want pesticide musical playlist, yes, such things exist, then yeah, you'll like the blog.
All right. So in lieu of bad dad jokes and pesticide playlists, we've thrown a lot of information at everybody. So Brett, can you kind of recap for us, maybe even from the beginning, that there's a lot to consider. So how do we fit all of this into our brain?
So we really need to think about, where were we before? Pesticides had almost no control on them whatsoever. We come along with EPA saying we need some guardrails, we need some rules, we need instructions, which leads us to mostly where we've been. You have products that require a license. So there is training for applicators. There is consideration of what these pesticides do in the environment. Then there's the label that gives you all of the instructions you need. And we are still in that now. We are considering the environment with a renewed focus on endangered species. We are still using the label to communicate all of the instructions. We're just saying that the label also includes a website. And this website is allowing you to look, what am I using? When am I using it? And where am I using it? And are there these extra instructions that I need to find? So really, it is a big change, and it is going to require a lot of enforcement considerations, and it is a departure from what we've done, but fundamentally, at the heart of it, it's not. It is still following instructions on using these pesticides in a manner that reduces the risk to people in the environment. We're just using websites and being more flexible in how we do it.
And it's very important for everybody to realize there are a lot of herbicides that we still use today that predate EPA and FIFRA. So people were using them. Oh no, EPA, FIFRA, rules. Well, we're still using 2,4-D diquat after FIFRA. Those products are still going to come along. We're still going to be using them now after the implementation of Bulletins Live 2 in endangered species protection. So a lot of these products are going to continue to be used, be very functional, helpful in our day-to-day lives and businesses. It's just going to be a little bit extra things, just like we had to deal with 50 years ago. But it's not going to be overly cumbersome. It's not going to put people out of work.
And I really think it's going to offer a flexibility that allows us to best meet both goals, right? Protecting endangered species and the environment, while also having the flexibility to allow these tools to be used, where maybe in the past we would have had to say it's too hard to communicate that. The answer is we can't use that versus, no, we really can with this very nuanced thing that applies to this very small group of people that now has a pathway to find that out.
And that's a great point, that instead of canceling a product because we don't know how to deal with it, now we can just nuance it and say, yeah, maybe here they can't use it, but everybody else still can. So in the long run, I think this is going to be beneficial for plant managers.
It just, it's the rough patch of trying to learn a new thing in a new way, right? Nobody really wants to change. But in this case, I think you and I have talked about it a lot, Dr. Farrell, that people don't fear change, they fear loss. And with this, there's this concern of, are we going to lose things? No, this is truly change that I think will actually increase what we're able to do potentially.
Well, I completely agree. So, Brett, thank you for coming in today and really helping us get our head around it. If you guys are out here and this is going to be impacting you, hey, if you're confused, if you need more information, reach out to us. These are the types of things we can do. We want to help. We want to continue educating. Subscribe to that blog. There's going to be more tools coming very soon that we can put into your hands. But start thinking about it. Get into this Bulletins Live 2 ecosystem. Start playing around. Realize it's not as bad as you might think. But if you have questions, give us a call.
Thank you for listening to Working in the Weeds. If you have any suggestions or ideas for the podcast, please email us at caip@ifas.ufl.edu. That's cape@ifas.ufl.edu. And stay tuned for the next episode as we continue to turn science into solutions.